Hello and welcome back to the 11th annual episode of NFL in Review. It's a Thanksgiving week now of football when people are eating turkey, stuffing their faces, and getting plenty of football. Lots of some exciting games. Just fun to have games on football every year, even though it kind of annoys me that the Detroit Lions play every year. But nonetheless, I'm joined by my good friend Connor Cavanaugh. How are you, my friend? And the Commanders are making a playoff spot.
Doing good, man. Thanksgiving is my favorite time of the year. The Cowboys are, I think, going to be scaring Eagles fans a little bit these next couple of weeks coming up if I was an Eagles fan. But excited to talk about it all and excited to get into it.
Yes, sir. So let's jump into things, man. Waste no time. There's a lot to talk about in some little bit of time here. And it was definitely a good week. Lots of blowouts this week. A lot of big victories from certain teams this week that we're not going to touch on. But what we are going to touch on is the Thursday night football game. The Titans versus the Packers. The Packers come back off of a really, really good win against the Cowboys, which looks even greater that they won that game now after what we saw the Cowboys put up against the Vikings. And they laid a dud. They laid a stinker game here. They couldn't get anything going. Their run game was non-existent. Christian Watson looked good again, but other than that, there's really nothing there for the Packers this week.
Yeah, to me, this was more about Tennessee. I think every year, Tennessee is just so underrated. You know, people don't love what Tannehill is as a quarterback, and they kind of, you know, they're forgotten about at the beginning of the year, and then as the year goes on, you see their name start to be, you know, thrown in, you know, to, you know, standings, top of the league. They're a really well-put-together team. Mike Vrabel is a really good coach, and they are ready for anything. I mean, going into Lambeau on a Thursday night is something that is not easy to do. And Tannehill had a 127 passer rating, which, I mean, for all the slack that Tannehill gets, I mean, he was really good. He threw the one pick, but 333 yards, two touchdowns, and he was really good. They were able to, you know, get a really, you know, another nice game out of Derrick Henry as well. And if they're going to keep playing like this, Tennessee is, once again, at the end of the year, they're going to be there. And with the way that they can run the football and the way that they can get after your quarterback defensively, they do pose problems for some of these top teams.
Yeah, and now we're seeing that Malik Willis, he's not the guy for them right now. They need to keep their quarterback that's been with the system for a few years now, that's made plays before, making good throws, and we saw it again this week. He made every right decision throwing the football wise. He was very efficient. And he deserves to be out there. And I would really like to see what I saw from Tannehill specifically, because if you have this offense with their limited wide receiver core, if you're gonna and this is a Green Bay defense that's not bad. It's a pretty very good defense. Jerry Alexander, I think, got roughed up towards the end of the game, but he was running around out there, couldn't track down who was it out there. Mr. Robert Woods finally coming back. Treylon Burks the rookie had a big game. And you know what? The receiving corps isn't great, but Tannehill, you make all the right throws, it'll work. And with your stud horse running back, Derrick Henry, you're right. Really, seriously, anything can happen, and they're always hanging around, and their running defense has been very, very efficient. There's an identity for Tennessee on defense, which we haven't really had in the past few years. And their strong suit a couple years ago with the Kevin Byard was their secondary. But now their rush defense is very good, tops of the league, and I did like what I see from Tennessee. For me, on the Green Bay side, I wanted to point out them first because this is one of their last hurrahs here. Like, they need to get these wins set under their belt, and after you come off of a really, really big win, you're home again a short week versus a Tennessee team that hasn't really found their rhythm yet this season. Could take advantage of it there, but no, Tennessee just steamrolled them through in the whole game, and the second half, just Green Bay wasn't able to really put any points up.
Yeah, last year, you know, with Devontae obviously being the number one, we did see towards the end of the year Alan Lazard take a really big role on that offense as the number two. Obviously, all the attention defensively last year was going to Devontae, so that probably did help. But it just doesn't seem like Lazard and Rodgers have very good chemistry. Once again, Lazard wins the target battle. I mean, 11 targets for him, but only 5 catches for 57, and he blew up a 23-yarder. So the rest of those, you know, those 4 catches were, you know, just short gainers. It just doesn't seem like they are on the right track together. Doesn't seem like the chemistry is real good there. And without Lazard, obviously, you did talk about Christian Watson emerging as at least a red zone threat. I'm not sure.
Yeah, red zone threat for sure.
Yes. But only 6 targets in the game overall. Mm-hmm. So obviously, it just doesn't seem to me like Rodgers has one guy there that he can trust right now. I thought going into the year that that would be Lazard, and it just hasn't really happened for them.
No, it hasn't. And there's not much time for them to figure it out. I think talented-wise, Lazard is their best all-around receiver and their guy. You know, you should be able to trust him to get the sticks for you and get those big first downs. But until we see it, man, I don't know if it's really going to ever come through for him, because if it hasn't happened now, I don't know when it has. Lazard's been healthy. He's been there every week, and we haven't been seeing those big results out of them too. But all in all, good game from Tennessee, and they're 7-3, looking really hot again now. They looked really good. They've been strong. They were at the beginning of the year. We had talk about the Jaguars were a team in that division to be worried about, and that's overreaction Monday, of course. But Tennessee has reclaimed the throne and looked really well. So let's move over. Let's go to Philly. Yeah, let's go to Philly. For me, this Philly game was hard to watch, right? Early on, well, first thing, you lose Dallas Goedert. You have him out for 4 weeks with a shoulder injury. He's not going to be back until probably the first Giant game when they played the first of the two Giant games in a three-week span, in week 14, week 16. And early, they couldn't get anything going at all. There were penalties up and down the field. I mean, you had your backup tight ends who were not Dallas Goedert make penalty after penalty, false start, holdings, can't catch the ball, plays like this. And you saw them get away from that completely in the second half. They didn't target one of their tight ends other than the one time. Twice. They targeted two times. And it's kind of hard for me to say that one guy's a big deal, which obviously he's a big deal. He's a great player. He's a Pro Bowl caliber player. But your offense can't look this ugly with one of those players, just one of those players down. And again, tight end's a big position in this league. A lot of teams that have really good tight ends are really good football teams. Like TJ Hockenson, really on a really good football team. Travis Kelce on a really good football team. George Kittle. All these guys, all these really talented tight ends are on good football teams because they get used a ton because that's their offense. And you see him hurt, and you're trying to find other ways to win. They got away from the run early in this game. They ran the ball 11 times in the first half, and I'm sorry, 11 times in the second half. They ran it like 3 times in the first half, 3 or 4 times. They weren't really getting any rhythm going. Jalen Hurts wasn't using his legs. It was all throws, and they, once again, beginning of this game, couldn't get off the field on third down the first quarter. Now, when Jonathan Taylor runs right down the field, scores a touchdown the first 5 minutes of the game, eventually you limit him, but my original take here from this game, before I throw it over to you, is just the Eagles, their defense held up when they needed them to, but the offense was definitely worrisome.
Yeah. For Indianapolis, these last 2 weeks, they've definitely looked like they're playing with a little bit more heart. I think Matt Ryan being in there has definitely changed up how they've looked a little bit. And if you're Indianapolis, you can't let a team like Philadelphia hang on for this long. I mean, pretty much, you know, most of this game, you had a lead. Not a big lead, but you had a lead. And you let Philadelphia continue to hang around. When a team as good as Philadelphia hangs around for that long, you're going to end up losing the game. They're going to make a play to win, and Hurts ran it in. Now we're to Philly, and you spoke for a minute about the Dallas Goedert injury and, you know, the non-production from, you know, from the backup tight ends. And I want to expand on that a little bit more, because I think that is actually a really big concern for Philadelphia. I mean, You look at the three main guys in the pass game for Philly. You know, it's Goddard, Devontae Smith, and A.J. Brown. In this game, 6 targets for Smith, 5 for Brown, and 2 for Boston Scott, 2 for Quez Watkins, who had the touchdown. I mean, so really, you got the normal amount of targets for Smith, maybe even a little bit less for maybe one or two of those, you know, maybe one
of
those guys.
Catches, yeah.
Oh, sorry, not 9 and 7. Okay. I'm sorry. I was looking at the receptions. The Dallas Goedert targets, I don't see where they went. So to me, that means that nobody else, at least in this one, got involved in place of Goddard. So that means as the year goes on, you're going to have to lean more heavily on those two wide receivers. And you're also going to have to lean more on the running game. And like you also pointed out, the running game wasn't very good in this. I mean, Miles Sanders 13 for 47. Philadelphia's rushing numbers are always going to look good because of Jalen Hurts. But when you look at game flow and you watch the games, They couldn't run the football very effectively in this one. And they honestly, throughout most of this game, looked very one-dimensional. Now, that it is going to take a little bit of time for Jalen Hurts to get used to Goddard not being out on the field because he is such a safety blanket for him. So yes. I am going to give a couple of weeks, you know, for the offense to figure it out. But they did look a little bit one-dimensional in this one. The last couple of weeks, to be honest with you, they haven't been able to run the ball as dominantly as we know Philadelphia to be able to run the football. And that is slightly concerning for me. But the biggest thing is you're going to struggle, you know, from time to time. Winning games in this league is very hard. And they were able to pull out a win, even though they didn't play that well. I think, you know, you take that to your bank. You try to fix some things. I would like to see somebody else get more involved, whether it's Quez Watkins or Pascal. I like Pascal. I don't know how, you know, people in Philadelphia feel about him, but I mean, I want to see somebody take a leap forward and take some of those targets that were Dallas Goddard's, so you're not so one-dimensional in the pass game.
Yeah, and you spoke on Pascal for a second. He was supposed to be their like definitive third guy with him and Quez Watkins, and you've seen a lot more. Not you've seen a lot, but you've seen more Quez Watkins on the field making the bigger plays. Zach Pascal not as much, but I don't see Zach Pascal on the field a lot, and he wasn't on the field a lot in this game either. I don't think, did he get a target? He might have gotten one target and a catch. I think he got a catch. He did. He had a catch for 9 yards. And for a guy like that who's a bigger receiver, he's not small, he should be able to be on the field more and fill in a role that Goddard can use and, you know, take with him, take that middle of the field away from the defense and try to really help Hurts out. But you haven't seen that. And again, it is 1 week, so they'll have some stuff to do. But one thing about Hurts in this game, he wasn't using his legs in the first three quarters. I was getting worrisome that there might actually be a problem with his legs because he hasn't done anything with his legs in the last few weeks. And that was kind of concerning because you don't want Jalen Hurts being your quarterback that needs to make all the right throws. He's not that guy, even though he's made some good throws this season. And he's definitely, definitely improved with his arm and his ball placement from the past year. But in the fourth quarter, man, he put the team on his back and really ran right through this defense. And the Colts are not a bad defense. No. They're not a bad defensive team. And a lot of people, questions on the Eagles were, they've never faced adversity. They've never been down a game. They've never been able to have to fight back. They've always played with leads. You're down 10 points in the fourth quarter against a good team away, and they made some really good noise in the fourth quarter there. Their run game got going. Jalen Hurts was all over the place. It was really good to see. I think you saw why Jalen Hurts has been such respected this season from the outsiders, more than just Eagles fans himself, because he's been a leader, and when they need him most, he stepped up, and that's big to see in growth and in a lot, and just leadership mentality for this team. That hey, you're never out of a game. Not that that's their mindset, but you're never ever out of a game, and the guy can put himself on his back. Another thing, real quick on the Eagles. I know I'm talking about all the Eagles. I got no choice. It is what it is. I want to talk about the Linval Joseph and the Ndamukong Suh signing by Howie Roseman. Howie, you have Jordan Davis go down. You have, who else? Javon Hargrave is banged up. You sign these two guys in the Ndamukong Suh, Linval Joseph, right off their couches. And they come into this game, and they made plays. They looked like they looked angry. Like they wanted to go out and play football again. Like actually motivated. And there could be a lot of things around that, you know. They haven't been playing at all this yet. They're hungry to get on the field. But they looked like they made a difference. More than one guy, which I think we need to talk about, in Fletcher Cox. He has been kind of irrelevant this season. He hasn't been producing Fletcher Cox numbers that he has in the past few years. And in his season totals for Fletcher Cox are really low. He had two combined tackles today. And I don't know the last time he had a sack. He has 3 sacks this season. He has 12 tackles, but he's not the dominating force. He's not playing the same percentage of snaps either that they're accustomed to seeing him play. He's playing around 60% of snaps, which isn't crazy low for a defensive tackle. But for a Fletcher Cox name and the guy who's supposed to be their biggest run stopper on that defensive line, he hasn't done it for me. And those two guys in 1 week of play just look more motivated. And I saw them make a sack together on Matt Ryan, which was funny. They both got a half a sack for that one, so that was fun to see. But all in all, for the Eagles, it's a good win, because it's a win where you looked like, uh-oh, in the fourth quarter, like, uh-oh, this isn't good. You know, the scaries are coming out. Now the talk's going to happen. They shut it up in the fourth quarter against a good defense. And their defense themselves, they were able to shut down Jonathan Taylor for what he's worth and limit him to 84 yards after a big first quarter from him. So, all in all, as an Eagles fan, good for them. They had to win this game. They can't come after a tough Monday night loss and come out here and lose the Colts, even though it's whatever the case may be. Can't lose this game. And they didn't. It was close. They didn't. But it was good to see adversity and them shine through adversity. So that's all for me on the birds, man. But, you know, I had to go on a little bit of a tangent. It's just sad. It's just the nature of the beast. But moving on to a really a big topic in the NFL world right now is the Jets-Patriots game, and more so Zach Wilson.
Yeah.
What are your initial thoughts on this whole Zach Wilson situation and the press conference and his teammates all in all at the end of this game?
Yeah, I think it had to be done. Defensively, the Jets are a playoff-caliber defensive group right now. They are playing ridiculously good, and at this point, Zach Wilson has given you nothing in terms of production. And you could deal with that with a second-year quarterback a little bit. If he's going to go into the press conference, he's going to say the right things, he's going to take responsibility for the absolutely horrible stats that he had in this game, and I'm not even going to get to the stats.
The stats mean nothing, I know. Well, they mean something.
But for him to go out and have the press conference that he did, you're going to lose the locker room. If you continue to throw Wilson back out there to have those terrible performances when the defense is playing as well as it is right now, you're going to lose the locker room. So for me, Robert Saleh had no choice. I also think it's more about the press conference than it was about the play. I think the press conference really put it over the edge. And for me, the only head scratcher is why it's Mike White and not Joe Flacco. But that's a conversation for another day. Overall, I think it's what had to be done. If you've watched the last couple of weeks for the Jets, their defense is phenomenal right now. And Zach Wilson is doing absolutely nothing to help them. They're anemic offensively. They're not letting him throw the ball down the field. And let's be real. The Jets are in the playoff hunt right now. They're smack dab in the middle of it. You need more production out of the quarterback position, or you're going to lose a locker room. So I think it was a move that needed to be made.
Yeah, it's a move that needed to be made. And you saw Mike White last year for a limited time play decently well. He had the one big game when he first came in. But Joe Flacco is your guy that started the season for you. Also, is a veteran who he's been accustomed to playoff races and being in the playoffs and having this pressure on him to go make the team better around him and get yourself into a spot. Now you lose this game, you're both 6-4 doing the Patriots, and you're trailing the Bills now, and you win this game, you're above the Bills. You're above the Bills because you beat the Bills. And that's just, all in all, it just irritates me to see the comments. Actually listen to him say those words to the press when his teammates, you can't go back into your locker room and look your teammates in the eyes after you say something like that. It's disrespectful.
Yeah.
That's disrespectful. You damn well know your defense did not lose you this game. You had 3 points until a kick run back with five seconds left in the game, which should have been kicked out of bounds, but again, story for another day also. Not really about the loss. It's more about the loss for Zach Wilson and where he's going to be now for this team. I don't see him playing. I don't think he's going to play quarterback again for this team. To be honest, I think he'll play quarterback again if they get to the playoffs this season. They are not going to put him back in this game unless they see nothing from Mike White and Joe Flacco seems uninterested for whatever reason, because I don't know how these players want to play for him after something like that. I might seem silly for saying one word could just limit him from playing quarterback this season for the Jets again, but I wouldn't want to play for this guy.
Yeah, it comes down to a situation as if you're the Jets organization, do you want to make the playoffs this year, or do you want to see what you have in the second overall pick? Because the point you made about Flacco is Flacco's done this before. Flacco's a seasoned veteran. He's been to a Super Bowl. I mean, the guy knows how to win games down the stretch, and he would definitely help this team win games right now. But The reason I think they're going to Mike White is if Flacco does go out and start to win these games that they should have been winning with Zach Wilson, there's no way you could go back to Zach Wilson. I think this is a short-term, sit him down, he acted like a punk, you have to put him in his place a little bit, you have to show him that his job isn't 100% secure. I think they're going to throw Mike White in there because they don't truly believe that Mike White's going to be able to put up a ton of production, so it's going to give them an easy outlet to go back to Zach Wilson in a couple of weeks.
I don't like it then.
I don't like it either. I don't agree. That's don't agree with it. I think the Jets fans and the organization has been through enough, you know, these last 15, 20 years where you have a really good chance to make the playoffs right now. You should go for it, and you should go Flacco. But I think the reason they're doing that is because they're giving themselves the opportunity to go back to Zach Wilson when they want to, and... Not saying I agree with it, but, I mean, obviously, they don't believe in Mike White. If they believed in Mike White, he would have started the first couple of games of the year instead of Joe Flacco when Zach Wilson was hurt. So, obviously, this is just we need to punish Zach Wilson for the bad play, the bad press conference, the not dealing with the media right. We have to sit him down and show him that his job isn't 100% secure, but we're going to go back to him.
That's fair. And Robert Saleh, I think this is more of a higher up move, to be honest. I don't think this is a Robert Saleh move, because Robert Saleh is like listening to reports after the game was like, I think you want to throw him back out there. You know, you gotta get him one more week. And it's like, no. The PR team stepped down and said, we can't have this guy play. Our team's getting ripped after we've had a really successful start to this year. You have to do anything by any means to get this guy to understand what he just said, and also his play has to improve. But what he said to your team that is playing their balls off defensively, that you want to make the playoffs. So I agree with that point. If I see Mike White struggle and they throw him back out there again, I have a lot of questions.
Yeah.
Then there's a lot of questions. That'll be from Saleh's point, because he controls that at that point after a week. If you stick with the guy and he struggles against Chicago, who defensively is piss poor, you should beat this team in Chicago. But we'll see. I don't know. I just think for Zach Wilson, he needs to realize he's a professional quarterback. You're in the NFL. Your play and the things you say aren't just going to get brushed off. They'll carry with you your entire career if they have to. Your character is everything at this level. And the way he handled himself is just, again, disrespectful is the word I want to use. And I would think everybody agrees. So, all in all, the Jets had 6 sacks this game against New England. They were all over Mac Jones and this rushing and the running game from the Patriots. But Zach Wilson really hurt himself there, man. He really hurt himself. He didn't have to do that. It's the easy answer. Sometimes when you're up at the podium, you want to make a smart answer. You want to make something where you can show you're not going to lay down to media or whatever, but you can't be dumb.
Especially in New York.
Yeah, especially in New York.
That media is going to kill you.
Yeah, and you can't be dumb. And unfortunately, he was being kind of dumb, and I would think he realizes what he did is a mistake, and I don't want him to come back on the air and apologize. I don't want it. I don't want him to do it to media. You do it to your locker room. You do it to your teammates. You go in that your locker room, and you sit down, players only, and you tell them, hey, I was frustrated. Whatever. Get it out. And just let it get it over with your teammates, because they're not going to respect you until you do something like that and man up. So, that's a lot of talking for a 10-3 game. But golly, that Zach Wilson just makes me irritated. That pissed me off. There's nothing else I can say. Another game that I actually enjoyed watching, really much enjoyed, was Detroit. They ran all over the Giants.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's kind of odd that this happened. It wasn't close. The Giants couldn't move the football. Receiving-wise, they had big games from Wandale Robinson, who unfortunately tore his ACL. And these wide receiver core couldn't get any thinner. And Darius Slayton, who they both had good games. But I don't know how this team couldn't move the football. The Saquon was irrelevant. He averaged under 2 yards a carry. Now, I know Aiden Hutchinson's very good defensively up front. I know they have a couple guys that are very good, or that are okay up front. Their secondary, other than Jeff Okuda and maybe C.J. Moore, isn't strong. So I don't really see how the Giants struggled here. But that raises concern for me, because they've been living off the hype of Brian Daboll and just that the momentum that he's given them every week, and now their roster construction is starting to show, in my opinion. So, what about you?
Yeah, we haven't talked about the Giants in a couple of weeks, but if you've been listening every week to the podcast, I've been saying this all along. The Giants are frauds. They're not a very talented team. They're a very well-coached team, and when you can run the football and keep the ball out of Daniel Jones' hands, you're going to have a chance to stay in games. To be honest with you, this ends the Giants for me, and I'll tell you why. You look at their schedule. They still have to go to Dallas. They have to go to Minnesota. They have to go to Philadelphia. They have to go to Washington. They have the Eagles at home, the Commanders at home, and the Colts at home. So really, you might be looking at two more wins the rest of the year. You might be looking at one against the Commanders, a split with the Commanders, and then the Colts at home you might be able to scratch out. I don't think you're beating Philly. You're definitely not going to Jerry World and beating them right now, and that's on Thursday. We're going to talk about that in a few minutes. Tomorrow, we're going to talk about that in a few minutes. And at Minnesota, I know they got smacked, but I mean, the Vikings are still the Vikings. For me, like this might be it. I think they built up a nice enough record now that they're still going to be in the playoff hunt, whether they win one or two more games, or if they could not even win another game and they would still be in the hunt. But to me, this just showed everything about the Giants that I already knew, and I think a lot of people already knew, but they didn't really want to say it because I mean, the record was they were 7-2.
Yeah, they were 7-2, and coaching really gets you so far. Here's the thing with me with the Giants, right? I didn't believe in them either, but I was starting to see like Daboll was just shoving artificial confidence in these guys that shouldn't really be there, but it was working. And I know in the NFL, your head coach means more than other sports, and we say this all the time, but coaching gets you so far, and players have to play. And for them to go out against Detroit, who is a good offensive team, not great, a good offensive team.
They've won three straight.
They're a good offensive team. They're been a better team as of recent than they were at the start of the year, and when they went on their fumbling, whether they're losing four in a row, five in a row, or was it? They were 0-6.
Yeah,
they were 0-6. So okay, so whatever it was, but their defense is still the same defense they've always been, and they weren't able to put any drive together, or finish any drive, and really make the big play. I mean, you have Saquon Barkley on your team, and you do nothing with it. I think that just shows a lot that your teams don't respect your quarterback. And I don't care that they threw for 341. It's all garbage time, and they still put up 18 points. It's not like there's nothing there. All in the fourth quarter, they put 12 points up. So I think for the Giants, I'm not going to say done. I want to see who they play next week. Is it Dallas?
Dallas tomorrow.
Oh, Dallas tomorrow. That's right. Dallas tomorrow. I'm interested to see Dallas tomorrow in Jerry World.
I think whatever the points are for Dallas, I'm going to take, and I'm going to put multiple units on it. I think it's going to be shellacking.
So we'll see if they're going to get embarrassed on national television, which is more than likely going to happen. But we'll move on from the Giants. It's just, that's one of those losses where it's like, all right, guys, we aren't that talented, and we have to look ourselves in the mirror. We could fight hard, but it just, you know, talent wins in every sport, and it's not there right now. But my game of the week, I think your game of the week, I'm going to go over to Kansas City and the Chargers game here for a second. And I really enjoyed what I watched for the first time in a while from Justin Herbert. I think he played a really, really good football game. He had a pick in there, but he played one of his best football games this season, maybe his best. I haven't known the last time I've said that. It's been a while. And he threw the ball well, and he made a lot of plays, and he made really, really good throws against a serviceable, a pretty good Chiefs defense.
Yeah, I totally agree with what you said about Herbert. I think a lot of it has to do with Keenan Allen and Williams coming back. Obviously, Williams didn't hang in too long. But Keenan was in the whole game, and we know that Keenan is the safety blanket for him. It also opened up, you know, a lot of space for Joshua Palmer to have a big night, which, you know, when it's Joshua Palmer and, you know, DeAndre Carter, it's going to be a lot harder to get them the ball. When you have Keenan Allen out there, a lot of attention is going to go to Keenan Allen. It's going to leave Joshua Palmer wide open. You know, they were able to benefit off of that. for me, this was about Kansas City, man. I mean
yeah, and Travis Kelce, before you keep going,
yeah,
they did lose this game. Yes. I want to say that. So yes. I'm just giving credit to seeing a good performance from the quarterback, which we haven't seen all year, and they did lose, and they're 5-5, but I just want to get that in there. Okay, carry on.
Yeah, I don't I mean, Travis Kelce, obviously, this is nothing new at this point.
Wami fantasy.
The guy's just ridiculous. I mean, what he does from the tight end position is transcendent in terms of receiving, you know, yards and the numbers that he's able to put up. I did see, you know, a lot in this game. Pacheco, which was a good thing to see. I think for Kansas City to be as good as they want to be in the new offense without Tyreek Hill this year, they're gonna have to have some resemblance of a running game down the stretch. Now, I know Edwards-Helaire just went on IR. I know they've been liking Pacheco lately. I know McKinnon's back there. He's had a couple of fumbles, and, you know, he's been up and down for them. But no matter who it is, I think they need to find somebody who's going to take some of the load off of Patrick Mahomes.
They have to.
Because we've seen Mahomes not need it, but it's going to make their life so much easier, especially with, you know, some receivers who they're not Tyreek Hill. I mean, they just aren't. The receiving core, when you look at it, minus Travis Kelce, is not what it has looked like in the past, just because of the one guy in Tyreek Hill.
Right.
So you need to supplement that a little bit with the running game. We saw that in this game, a little bit of a comeback. Obviously, Kelce late was the guy, which, you know, is a Kansas City special. I mean, every single close game at the end, it's going to Kelce. But it was nice for me to see a little bit of a running game. And for the Chargers, you're 5-5 now, so you gotta win a couple games before I can keep talking about you, because now you're a 500. I mean, you have a worse record than the Commanders do right now.
Yeah, they do. And we'll see what happens with those two teams. But their team right now, those teams are kind of not similar, but they're similar in the ways that they're both struggling. Like their defense for the Chargers have let them down, and the defense for Washington has let them down. And whenever there's not a throwing game, they don't win games. Whenever there's not a throwing game, Washington don't win games. We're not going to talk about Washington right now.
No.
But I'm just saying, the Chargers, they need to improve. Absolutely, they need to improve, because their defense is supposed to be the thing, really, to be better than an offense this year. They're supposed to be top of this division right there, neck and neck with them. They're not. But one thing about the Kansas City Chiefs here, now this might come off as disrespectful, and I don't want it to be. I don't mean it by any means. At all. We saw Clyde Edwards-Helaire go down with an IR injury. Going on the IR. Which I hope he's alright. Hope the guy comes back and he's fine and healthy. Now, this team is forced to stick with their two running backs. They're forced to have Pacheco be their lead guy. And they're forced to Jarrett McKinnon to be their change of pace back. Which is a perfect change of pace back for this team. Who can catch the ball. He had one target in this game. But he's a good pass catching guy out of the backfield. I think having those two and having Pacheco be your lead horse, if they have to just force feed them the ball. They have to. You need to have something in the playoffs to carry you forward in a running game. As good as you are, and again, they can win games, they can go to the championship game, they can go to the Super Bowl throwing the football. They can't. They have the talent. Patrick Mahomes is great. He's the greatest quarterback in the league. But time is going to come where there's things that aren't going your way. You saw in this game early. You didn't have Juju in this game either, and they were struggling to really get going on offense, to really put drive. They couldn't. They were three and outs, a lot of three and outs early in this game, in the second quarter especially, and you had to lean to your running game, and you had no choice. Andy Reid got desperate. You don't see Andy Reid just pan the ball off. He loves these trick plays, loves moving guys around, loves getting passes from Mahomes and these shovel passes. He loves getting them out of the pocket sometimes. And I think this was a week where you see something, like you've said, that you have to stick by now. You have to stick with these two guys, and you have to continue feeding them the ball off. If that's going to hurt your team, your throwing numbers, then you know what? So be it. It is what it is. You're going to need these guys to become staples of your team. You're going to need a running game to become stable. They haven't had it all year. They haven't had nothing all year from any part of the running game. So, again, the Chiefs, they're number one in my power rankings.
Me too.
You know, they're the greatest team in the league right this at this very moment. They're definitely the best team, number one team. But every team has a flaw, and they need to shore that flaw up by giving Pacheco, who's your best guy, who looks the best with the best burst, the rock. And it was good to see him get 15 carries and do something with it. So that was nice. So let's move on. I'm gonna jump back. We're gonna go to the shellacking that you think is gonna happen tomorrow night against the New York Giants. And the Cowboys went in to Minnesota and won by 37 points. Now, a couple things. Number one, Tony Pollard, superstar. Future superstar.
He's him.
Number two, Brett Maher, superstar.
Him.
And number three, Minnesota, when they're... I don't know if I know my number three. Because Minnesota, throwing the football when they're down, they... You give Kirk pressure, he can't do anything with it, it looked like, at all. He did nothing with it. I don't think he got sacked. He did. He got sacked 7 times. Michael Parsons was all over the place. And they've been able to stabilize other opponents' pass rush pretty well this season. Kirk Cousins has been really decent throwing the football and getting Justin Jefferson involved. And you saw Adam Thielen have a couple good games back-to-back. Not good games in his standards, but good games for our standards, for what we think he is now in his career. But this was just a beatdown, man. And Minnesota just got laid out. They didn't want to get back up. They didn't give any fight. And Dallas just ran down their throat, and it was tough to watch, bro. It was tough to watch. I think we really saw the Dallas Cowboys that Jerry envisioned with this running game. They split carries, and they looked like a force in that game.
Yeah. The second half against Green Bay was probably, with Dak so far this year, the worst I've seen the Cowboys as a whole. This was the best. In the whole league this year, this performance from Dallas was the best overall performance from every single asset of a football team in one game in the whole league this year. Offensively, they couldn't be stopped. Michael Parsons, like you said, ran all over the place, and Kirk Cousins didn't look like he had a clue what was going on.
No.
And you talked about Brett Maher. Special teams was just as good as the offense and defense. I think the Cowboys overall are somewhere in the middle. And I think there is a lot of question marks coming out of this game for Minnesota, mainly because it was at home. I mean, this kind of beatdown cannot happen at home, especially when you're 8-1. But I don't really think this tells us a ton about the Cowboys. I think they're a little bit in the middle. Obviously, everything was clicking on all cylinders on all three sides of the ball, and we don't see that happen very often with the Cowboys, and especially with Dak Prescott. So I'm not going to take a ton of stock in it. I think it's right in the middle of this and the Packer game, and I think they are a top contender in the NFC, but they're not my favorite, and I'm not going to let this game change that.
I agree. I don't think they're the favorite either. I don't think they deserve to be called the favorite, even after a whooping of a very formidable opponent who's now 8-2. The Vikings are right up there. They're above them still to this point. I think they're the third seed in the conference now, the Cowboys, and we'll see. We'll see. I want to see them continue it against a weaker, Giants team, and a team you should be able to shellack, if that's going to be the word of the day, which it might be. So I don't expect a 40-3 domination, but I want to see if they come out with the same fire on Thanksgiving. They get the Thanksgiving game every year. Go out and play the football that you just played. Go duplicate your football you just played 5 days ago and go do it again. Four days ago. And we'll see. I think Dak was very efficient in this game, too. He had 3 completions. He was throwing. He played really
His
well.
His best game in a while.
Yeah, he played very, very well. So that was good to see. Again, Tony Pollard, he needs to be out there as much as possible. Because that guy, there's no reason, zero reason why Zeke should. Again, you need a guy to take the load off. And Zeke didn't play bad. He was the goal line guy, which is what he is at right now, which is what I feel like. Everyone knows he is. He doesn't have the same burst, but Tony Pollard, man, the guy is very capable of being an extremely good back. He is Austin Eckler. That's literally what he is. Just his name's Pollard. He's the exact same replica, build, everything as Austin Eckler, and that's scary if the team can unlock him for the long term. rest of the season, because that's only going to help out him. And if the OBJ rumors are swirling around in the Dallas camp, and I don't know what you think about that. If that you think that's going to happen, do you think it's just more kind of blown out of proportion because they're winning and, you know, everyone's kind of tweeting at him on Twitter and it's a big thing and, you know, he wants to go somewhere, and I think it's been down to the Giants or the Cowboys, and if I had to choose, he'll probably go to Dallas if that's going to be the two choices. But what is your feeling on that situation with the OBJ thing?
Yeah, I think Dallas is definitely the front runner. I mean, they obviously they have the championship team in terms of, you know, that's what they're looking like. They're, you know, they're going to be a contender.
Yeah,
and it's really going to, you know, it's America's team. Odell and his, you know, his star power and his, you know, his how famous he is, that really works in Dallas. It works better than it would work anywhere else. It really just comes down to if Jerry Jones is going to be willing to outbid a couple of people, because we know Jerry Jones, you know, he loves to pay his guys. He loves to go through the draft, and he doesn't do a ton in terms of free agency and picking up people that, you know, weren't drafted by him. We'll see if he's, you know, willing to pay, you know, a decent penny to bring in, you know, a guy that would really, really bolster up the offense. It's going to come down to Jerry Jones, but I do think they're the front runners.
Yeah, I agree, and I think he'll get the money. I really do. I think he'll get the money. I don't think he's scared to make the money, to throw the money at people. I mean, throw it to Zeke. That's all you need to know. So, but no, if they add OBJ, man, it's just going to unlock another really, really, really scary part of the offense, because he's a very good player if he can duplicate what he did at the end of last year, and in the Super Bowl before he went down. He was looking like OBJ again, and that's something that any team would absolutely love to add to it. And if you could put it on the receiving corps with CeeDee Lamb and Michael Gallup, and him, you throw him in there, it absolutely helps this team out a lot. So, I would hate that, but it's kind of inevitable at this point, and I'm sure that's in the near future whenever he gets cleared. But let's jump over, man. Thanksgiving games, Thursday night games, or Thursday games. And we're going to go right down the list here. Bills-Lions. Bills-Lions in Detroit. What initial thoughts?
Yeah.
You know?
Detroit's been playing a lot better football.
They have?
The last couple of weeks. I do think for the Bills, they haven't had to travel. They played in Detroit, you know, last week due to the snowstorm. They don't have to leave. I think the Bills are going to win this game. I do think it's going to be a little bit closer than some people might think, because Detroit is playing pretty good football right now. But I would take the Bills.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Bills in this game also. I think Josh Allen's going to, and that the receivers are going to have a really big day. I think their run game is going to be dismissed, because I've seen the past couple weeks with Detroit is Aiden Hutchinson's really starting to get going as like an emerging as an elite run blocker, pass blocker. And forcing this team, they're getting better linebacker play, not great linebacker play, but they're getting better defensive play in total the last few weeks. And you saw it; they didn't allow Barkley, who's one of the best from Texas League, to get going. And it'll make them one-dimensional. I think it'll be a close game. If we're gonna go talk about the spread for a second, it's a 9.5-point spread. That's a 9.5 is a lot of points. I get it; it's the Bills, but I'm thinking about possibly taking the points for the Lions here in this game because it's their Thanksgiving game, man. It's an honor for them to play on a Thanksgiving. You're the 12:30 game. You kick us off. Blood's going to be flowing, you know. And you're going to want to make a little bit of a statement. You saw it last year with David Blau. Made some statements. So, we'll see. I think I'm going to take the Bills. Not think. I'm pretty sure the Bills are going to win this game. But, again, I think it will be closer. And I'm excited for it, though. Because Thursday football game, Thanksgiving football games are always fun to watch.
Yeah, you said the spread was 9.5?
9.5.
I'd probably take the Lions to cover the 9.5.
Yeah, I agree.
But I would take the Cowboys to go over whatever the number is.
I do want to know
what you think about this game, because it is, you know, it is a divisional, you know, opponent game, so it, you know, might be closer. I think it's going to be a shellacking to keep the word going, and whatever the points are, I don't even care. Give me Dallas with the points.
Yeah, it's it'll probably be a beatdown. Yeah, it will probably be a beatdown. But every division game in the NFC in the NFC East this year has been a close game, I remember correctly. Every game.
Except for the first meeting between Philly and Washington. But every other one has been close.
They've all been close games, and they usually are. NFC is one of those divisions who always have really good rivalries, no matter the matchup. And the Giants just got embarrassed, and they looked really bad. I believe with Dable and how he's coaching, you're going to have these guys ready to play their best football, whatever their best football is. Mm-hmm. If it's not great, it's not great. But they're going to be ready to play whatever their best football is against this Cowboys offense right now. I don't think it's strong enough to beat this offense at all or keep them controlled and have a chance to win this game at the end. But I think it'll be a little bit closer than what you're saying. I don't think it'll be a complete beatdown. I think we're thinking a 10-point victory or so. I'm thinking somewhere around there. The Cowboys have – there's nothing for me after watching them last week say that they're going to go out and lose this game at home on Thanksgiving Day against the Giants who just got mollywopped. We're going to use another word. We'll just keep going with these words against the Lions last week. So Thursday night game. What are we thinking? Vikings-Pats.
I like New England. New England's won the last five matchups against Minnesota. I think Minnesota might go into a small, maybe not extended, but maybe a couple week spiral here after the beatdown at home. I think Kirk Cousins is going to be under almost the same amount of pressure with this New England front line as he was with the Dallas front line. And I think New England, even though they couldn't score against the Jets last week, I think they played really good football everywhere else. And I think Bill Belichick is going to have something up his sleeve. He's going to be in the spotlight Thanksgiving, Thursday night. He hasn't been in this big of a spot since last year when Tom Brady came back to town. I think this might be a really close but a good win for New England and the continuation of a little bit of a spiral for the Minnesota Vikings.
I agree completely, actually, with that. Patriots front is been extremely good. They've been the best rushing defensive team in the league.
And like you pointed out, Kirk Cousins, when he's under pressure, he's not very good. So if they're going to put pressure on him, it's going to be a long night.
I believe they're going to put pressure on it, let alone it's 8:20 on a Thursday night, Thanksgiving, the entire world's, literally the entire country's watching. So he's nervous already. Just looking at the schedule, he's trembling in his boots. But we saw it last week. When he has to be the guy to no one else is clicking, you have to go out there and make the throws. Make the plays. Don't get nervous in the pocket. Don't just, stand around and take hits. You got to get the ball out quick. If he can't get the ball out quick to these guys, it's going to be a long night for him. And the Patriots are a really good defense, and they're very well coached. And they're going to be ready to play a team that is desperately, I think, a little bit in the back of their mind, are thinking like, all right, it's been a couple weeks now. We haven't looked great. We got to get back on it. We have to get back to it. And try to be dominating again. And I don't know if that's necessarily going to happen. I think it'll be inside a field goal victory for the Patriots. But all in all, I think New England comes out and plays really well defense against this team and keeps it close and eventually edges out a win. So that's all the games. Is there anything else on the games just in general? And the Thursday night games before we get into our picks of the week, which is going to be Sunday and Monday only. Unless you want to throw out a Thursday, we can, but we basically
I say Sunday, Monday.
Yep. Sunday, Monday's a better off. We can enjoy tomorrow. Any other thoughts or anything you want to talk about before we move on to that?
No, not really. I do like the slate. I do like that we see Buffalo, Dallas, and I do like that we see Minnesota right back in the spotlight after the shellacking. I think they're going to be fun games. I think the Cowboys are going to blow them out, but I think the Bills game is going to be pretty close, and I think the Patriots game is going to be to the last second. So I think we're going to see some good football on Thursday.
Agreed. And you get to see the Cowboys Vikings right back at it in the opposite side of the spectrum to see if Dallas can continue to be what they just showed and play extremely, extremely good offense, and Vikings can get it back and piece it back together to fight against a dangerous New England team, sneaky, dangerous defensive team. So let's go on to the picks, man. First thing is I'm going to give you a game as always.
Did I to be honest with you, I totally forget what my survivor was last week.
Your survivor last week, if I'm not mistaken,
can't remember
was
if I'm still
San
in.
Francisco. If I'm not mistaken, you're, oh, wait a minute, hold on. We had Commanders, Jets, and Bills. You took the Bills last week as your survivor. So, yeah. So, that's nice. That's off the table, and I don't think that's a big thing. I guess, I wish I had something on the table to give you, but I just have it because I really screwed up, and I would have went 0-2 because I was going to pick the Birds last week. So
All right, so let me throw in the survivor real quick, and then we'll go back and forth a couple. I'm going to take the Denver Broncos in Carolina. I know Russell Wilson's been really, really bad, but that defense has been really good. Sam Darnold's going to be starting. It's going to be his first start of the year. I think they're going to struggle, and I'm going to take the Broncos. I think the Broncos have to win one of these games at some point.
Yeah, they have to win one of these defensive masterpieces that they've been throwing out, even though it wasn't a masterpiece last week. They kind of let that one slip. But, right, they lost last week, right?
Yes.
The Raiders? Yeah, so they're going to bounce back. So that's a good one. I like that one. My first pick, I think, how do we do? So I take a pick game, you tell me a game, or you give me two. You give me two, right?
Yes, we normally give each other. All right, so the first one I'm going to give you is Cincinnati in Tennessee.
Bengals Titans. That's a good one. I like that one. Cincy in Tennessee.
That's a tough game, man. That's going to be a good one.
That is really going to be
a good game. Joe Mixon is currently questionable. He's in concussion protocol, so that could change the game if it's going to be no Jamar Chase and no Joe Mixon. But he hasn't been ruled out.
I think Jamar possibly can play this week. I think there's a possibility he plays this week. And if I'm going to go in with him playing this week, Oh, God. I liked what I saw out of Tennessee. The Bengals are just been so weird. They've been extremely bipolar. I think we're going to take Tennessee to continue to roll against the Bengals team on Sunday.
Good pick. I like it.
So I'm taking Tennessee. Now, as for you, let's go over, and I want. I know what I want. Let me do Green Bay versus the Philadelphia Eagles on Sunday Night Football.
You know, if Green Bay beat Tennessee, I'd probably take Green Bay in this game because the last 2 weeks from Philadelphia, I haven't really loved what I've seen.
Right.
Even though they won one of those games. But Green Bay did not show me anything on Thursday against Tennessee, and it's in Philadelphia. The Philly fans are going to want a win after the last game in Philly and how that went. So I'm going to take Philadelphia, and I don't think it's going to be that close.
You don't think so?
I think it'll end up being around 10.
Wow. Interesting.
I think they're going to handle them pretty easily.
I'm just going through the emotional damage of the Phillies fans. So, obviously, I think it's going to be a closer game. I think they'll win the game also being at home. And, there's not really that much there for the Packers. More than we think it really is. But, okay. I like it. I love it, actually. I love it. So, good. Hit me.
Steelers in Indianapolis taking on the Colts. Steelers have looked better, but so have the Colts. Oh, Monday night. I'm sorry.
Now we're doing Monday night football, huh? Steelers at the Colts. Oh, man. Okay. In Indy, Jeff Saturday. Pittsburgh has, defensively has looked pretty good.
Yep.
Colts have been kind of, when they came back, they won one game. They lost a close one where they should have closed out. This is in Indy?
This is in Indy, yep.
In Indy. Nah, I don't really care. I'm going to take the Steelers, I think, in this game. I like the Steelers. I like them with T.J. Watt back. I think we saw Najee Harris finally get going, and they've used him well. And Kenny Pickett is looking sharper, and he's starting to get comfortable in the offense. And I think those things all clicking together again. It is the Steelers' offense. It hasn't been hot, but I really think Najee Harris getting unlocked a little bit here, played really well, is able to take down a Colts team that is still teetering back and forth for me. On Monday Night Football. On our away game, but I'm going to take the yellow and black. So.
All right.
I don't have a survivor pick, man.
No survivor. So you got to throw me one more, and then that's it for the picks this week. By the way, we have yet to win the picks parlay.
Ever since we started putting money on it.
We throw money on all of our picks combined every week, yet to win one.
Oh, goodness. The first one would have been nice if we would have won it right then and there. Yeah. That would cover us for at least another couple of weeks if we win one of these. It'll cover us for a bit. But let's see. Game here that I want to throw at you. Okay. You know what? I wanted to see. This could be an easy question for you. Bears-Jets. The response from the Jets team. Tell me.
See, this is actually a tough game because we're not sure if Justin Fields is going to play. If Justin Fields if Justin Fields is not going to play...
Who's their backup?
Nick Foles.
Give me a second.
To be honest with you, I think I'm gonna take the Jets, actually. To be honest with you, because they've played so well defensively the last couple of weeks that even average quarterback play wins them these games. It's at home. Even if Justin Fields is playing, he's obviously not gonna be 100%. And I think even if Mike White doesn't play great, it's going to bring a little bit of a spark, at least early on in the game. I think I'm going to take the Jets. I know they hurt me last week. It was, I think, the first pick all year that I got wrong, but I think I'm going to roll them again.
Hey, I don't hate it. I really don't hate it. What we've seen from that defense has been phenomenal, and it's continued to be phenomenal against not great offensive teams, but Chicago's been looking pretty good on offense lately. Yep. Their running game and how they've been using with Justin Fields, if he plays, has been very good. Their defense has let them down. So interesting to see if they can keep rolling defensively, the Jets. But I like it. I like it. So we got Broncos, Eagles, Jets out of you. And I picked the Titans and the Steelers. And we'll lock that in on Saturday or something. And we'll finally, hopefully, you know, it's not hitting. It's just not going
to
hit.
Try to get a win.
It's just not hitting. So, you know what I'm saying? let's think of it that way. Just, yeah, maybe that works. So all in all, good episode. I think we got through a lot of things I want to get through, touched on things we want to touch on. Everyone listening, Thanksgiving's tomorrow. Enjoy all the food. Everything. I got a couple questions for you. Give me your top three Thanksgiving foods right now.
Easy. Mashed potatoes, pie, and sweet potato casserole.
I got to take pie out of the... Come on, man. Listen, you a stuffing guy?
I'm not a big stuffing guy. I know stuffing is one for a lot of people. I know stuffing's one for a lot of people. So I know I'm a little bit different.
What kind of pie?
Pumpkin, apple.
Any pie. Just pie's great. No,
I am a big pie guy, but apple and pumpkin mainly.
Apple and pumpkin mainly. Okay. All right. I mean, yeah, see, for me, I got to be the weird one. Turkey is up there for me.
Okay.
Okay. No, for whatever reason, turkey gets disrespected, and I don't understand it. It is the bird of the hour, which I get it.
I think the disrespect is warranted. I don't think it's that good of a bird.
Well, you know what? The dark meat says otherwise. So it is what it is. But I go turkey. I go stuffing. And I'll go sweet potatoes. I like sweet potatoes. Sweet potato casserole is a good one, too. I just go sweet potatoes. Is that the same thing?
No, actually. It's there's
okay. Yeah, I just got
the brown sugar and stuff on the casserole. Yeah, it's a little bit different, but definitely not as healthy for you. So you're probably better off going with straight sweet potatoes. Yeah, you're right. On Thanksgiving, you just throw all that out the window. You just
throw it on the plate. You just eat. Are you a believer in cranberry sauce?
No.
Okay, good. Agreed. All right, and that'll do it for us. That'll do it. It was definitely a fun episode.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Yes, happy Thanksgiving. Enjoy your time, friends and family, and everything else that goes on to dogs, cats, mouses, and all other things. Make sure you eat multiple plates. Enjoy your Thursday. Enjoy the football games, and we'll see you guys next Wednesday, Tuesday, depending on the day, whatever comes up for Week 12 games, and we'll see where we're at.
Family, food, and football tomorrow.
Yeah, the triple F. Nothing better. Everybody, have a great one. Peace out.